Monster Man, episode 442, Ogres of Various Kinds.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 2nd edition. And we're taking a look at 5 monsters, of which only one is really new. And I think you'll be a little surprised about it, because I sort of thought we had done it already, but apparently we have not. Before we get started, some commercial announcements. My zine, The Meganium Mind Murders, is now on sale for digital copies. You can also order a physical copy directly from me. I sent some US copies to Exalted Funeral, but their showing is out of stock at present. I'm not sure whether that means they just haven't been like added to the system or whatever, but you can also order physical copies of the pamphlet Off Pantheons from there, or again, directly from me. So I'll put some links in the show notes. Thank you all for your patience. If you did back The Meganium Mind Murders during itch funding, the bonus materials are now up on the itch page, and if you haven't sent me your address for your physical copy, please do so. I sent out an email, but if you didn't get it, just drop me a message. All right, anyway. First up, we have ogres. Now, we've covered ogres before, both in a regular episode and in a special episode, and I don't know that I have all that much to say about them particularly. The ogre entry in Monster's Manual is an omnibus entry, so it includes first the ogre properly so-called, second the ogre mage, what would eventually be rebranded as the oni, and the Marrow, which is basically the wet ogre. Like a lot of more or less straight adaptations of monsters from 1st edition, these have been glamored up with some nice Tony DiTerlizzi illustrations. Although, so the ogre mage is carrying a couple of humans wrapped up on its back. Carrying people seems to be a very ogre magey thing. I have an old Ralpartha, maybe? Grenadier? Something. Ogre Mage. One of those. And it's holding a woman in one hand. It's a lovely miniature, and I guess this idea of the Ogre Mage carrying people seems to be a popular one. Although, I have to say, the people who are wrapped up in a kind of sleeping bag on the back of this Ogre Mage seem pretty relaxed about it. They seem to be okay with this, which surprises me. I like some of the little bits of descriptions, the idea that they smell like curdled milk. That seems very on-brand for ogres. That's a kind of detail that I feel like you might find in a fairy tale. I've always found the Ogre Mage confusing, and the 2nd edition doesn't particularly change that. In particular, it's got these descriptions like, oh, it's, quote, oriental, close quotes, which is just strange. I respect that there are fantasy worlds which are based around analogs of historical cultures. The most obvious example would be something like the Hyborian Age, where, you know, Aquilonia's Rome, and, you know, Stygia is Egypt, and so on and so forth, right? And I'm sure I got one of those wrong. Maybe Aquilonia. I've always thought of Aquilonia as being like Rome, but never mind. Just because it's an empire that winds up with barbarian king. Or like Theia in 7th C, where each nation is basically a particular European nation at the height of its swashbuckling. So there's like Elizabethan sea dogs, and the Three Musketeers, and Vikings. But in a more fantastic fantasy world, it's weird to have these analogs to real-world cultures. It always strikes me as odd. Like, I don't know. I think there are some people for whom the accessible medievalism is what they really enjoy about fantasy, and then they find sort of more modern fantasy off-putting. And then there are some people for whom the point is, you know, the magic and the monsters, and they don't really care about whether something evokes a particular romantic adventure fiction feel of the idealized Middle Ages. Anyway, I guess my point is, it's strange that there's a quote-unquote oriental part of this fantasy world, rather than just like, hey, monsters can be anywhere. We can drink tea in any part of this fantasy world, not just fantasy China. Anyway, those are ogres, and I complained about this aspect of them in the first one, I'm sure. So, nothing has changed. Next up, we have the ogre, half hyphen. This is another omnibus entry, because it also includes the Ogrelon, which is a hybrid of ogre and orc, but specifically only in one direction. The other, as I'm sure I've talked about in the orc entry, is what produces an orog. The orog and the Ogrelon seem to me to be basically there to provide kind of intermediary steps in the orc punching hierarchy, right? You go from punching kobolds to punching goblins to punching orcs, and there's kind of like a weird intermediary stage between orcs and ogres, And I guess that's what the Orog and the Ogrelon are there for. The Orog is basically a slightly buffer orc. Isn't that just a hobgoblin? Yeah, like, I feel like that space was already adequately filled by hobgoblins and bugbears, but what do I know? But we have actually already covered the Ogrelon, but we haven't, I guess it's an Ogrelon, but we haven't covered the half-ogre properly so-called, which I believe is making its first appearance here. Well, its first appearance in a monster book, obviously, it was in the Monster's Compendium, and it was probably in some Dragon magazine article prior to that. Half-ogres are basically kind of an elite within ogre society, but more of an intellectual elite, if that's a term we can apply to ogres, by which I mean by virtue of their human parentage, they are more intelligent than their ogre counterparts. They're like full-blooded ogre counterparts, and they function as sort of leaders and advisors to other ogres. And in particular, they're used to kind of up the combat threat of ogres who are normally too dumb to do things like use complex tactics or identify particularly important targets and focus their attacks on them, but might do so under the leadership of a half-ogre. So they kind of earn the respect of the big ogres by being smarter and more dexterous than their stronger but stupider relatives. Half-anythings are always a bit weird. We get a description of how they interact with ogre society, which is where they're like, they're sort of high achievers in ogre society because they're always trying to prove themselves because they're smaller and weaker. And in human society, they tend to be outcasts and they sort of are surly loners and often move into professions that don't require a lot of social skills. So kind of like living alone in the woods and being a hunter or being a soldier or whatever. There's a really weird section in here that actually doesn't really apply to this monster, but it's sort of there to explain their biology, but doesn't explain the question that it poses. So this section asks, why is it that ogres can reproduce with humans, but they can't reproduce with elves or halflings? Now, quite leaving aside the imagined mechanics of reproduction between a halfling and an ogre, the question itself, I guess, is one of those things that, like, the rulebook said it, so we're stuck with it. It doesn't really make any sense. Let's make a lot of words. And the reply to this is, they say that ogres have got, quote, rapidly adaptive biology, close quotes, and that's what makes it possible for them to breed with humans, even though they're not closely connected to humans. So it's saying that these mages were investigating the issue because they wondered if ogres had some sort of shared ancestry with humans, like orcs. Orcs can interbreed with humans, why can't they? Like orcs, who can also interbreed with humans. So this is a unique feature of orc and ogre biology that basically allows them to interbreed in ways that, like, don't make a lot of sense genetically. And then it talks about the mongrel men for a bit, sort of overlooking the fact that the mongrel men are an argument for this being true of almost everybody, because mongrel men are supposed to be full of people whose, like, dad is a crab man, but their mother's a hobgoblin or whatever. And anyway, that doesn't answer the question. Because now the question stops being, why is it that ogres can interbreed with humans, and becomes, why is it that ogres can't interbreed with halflings and elves? You know, the question you introduced at the beginning of this paragraph, book? So strange, as if anyone cares. Look, I think throughout this season it's been pretty clear that I'm not a fan of the way in which the Monsters Manual devotes a lot of its time to kind of filling in the sorts of questions that the Dragon Magazine letters page probably got a lot of, questions that were wiser ignored. But if you're gonna do it, it should at least make some kind of sense, because this asks the question and then presents as an answer to that question something that very clearly doesn't answer the question. You just can't go thinking about these creatures in that kind of scientific way anyway, but that's my personal objection to it. I understand some people like a more grounded, naturalistic fantasy world. I'm not particularly one of them, but, you know, that's just a question of taste. Some people like it and they care about these things. It's fine. I do wonder if this is a question people are really asking. Actually, having said that, I remember in White Dwarf in the late 80s, there was some heated debate about the genetics of half-elves in the, well, I don't know if it was that heated, but there was some debate about the genetics of half-elves in the letter column. So perhaps they were. And the existence of half-elves and half-orcs has this kind of, you know, it has a pedigree in the world of fantasy, and the idea of people having some kind of magical heritage that makes them special is certainly something that goes there as well. The only problem is that there's a lot of, well, I don't want to reiterate the whole conversation about biological essentialism, which we've had already, but it is weird to see that there's a section in here that specifically says that these, you know, half-orcs and half-ogres and whatever inherit their chaotic evil tendencies from their parents. from their, like, ogre or orcish parents. Which is weird, because humans can be of any alignment. I mean, theoretically, these guys can be of any alignment, too. But you know what I mean, right? It's not like there aren't chaotic evil humans. If we were going to pick the kind of humans that would marry an ogre, I do feel like chaotic evil ones, you know, the sort of people whose goals might align with an ogre's sort of general pillage and devastation agenda, might be among them. I don't know. So I used to play the miniatures game Mordheim, and in that game I played Ostlanders. So within the Empire, the setting of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay and Mordheim, you have all these different provinces, and each province has kind of like a different stereotype. And so the stereotype of Ostlanders is that they're kind of rubes. You know, they live in this like rugged, remote province, and they're hard and self-sufficient and not very sophisticated compared to their neighbors in other provinces. That's a stereotype. And one of the things that you could get for your team was you could have an ogre. And the premise of this was that, like, this was your cousin. And no one was going to point out that he was an ogre because that was impolite. And also because he was huge. But you could never have more than one because you could just never have enough food to feed two of them. They're very hungry. And I just think that's funnier almost. Like, if you just have one member of your family who's very clearly an ogre, and people are just like, oh yeah, we don't talk about Junior. To say nothing of all the other grotesque implications. So that's my position on half-ogres. Half-ogres, yes. Thinking a lot about ogre reproductive biology, I would prefer to be excused. All right, so that's about all the monsters we have time for today. In the middle of this week, we've got the penultimate episode of our Patron Deities season on Hawaiian mythology, and in our next regular episode on Friday, we're going to have another special request episode, assuming I get it done in time, and if not, I guess we'll just crack on with Monsters Manual. So either way, I hope that you will join me right here for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.